Welcome to the Data Protection and Privacy Podcast, hosted by David Clark. Thank you for joining us. David is the founder of one of the largest LinkedIn data protection groups, which now has over 21,000 members, and David has over 102,000 followers on Twitter. This podcast is about data protection and privacy technology, where David chats to leading-edge technology companies and thought leaders to discover whether technology can make our data protection work easier. Please subscribe and follow David on Twitter at @OneDavidClark.
Welcome to the Data Protection and Privacy Podcast. My name is David Clark, and today I have Dr. Chiara Rusticci, a legal analyst and IT law expert with focus on the new Brussels, Washington digital regulation drive. She is an independent legal scholar affiliated with the Department of Information Engineering, Electronics and Telecommunications of La Sapienza University in Rome. She was elected chair of the Law Specialist Group at the BCS, formerly known as British Computer Society, and ranked among the top 20 GDPR experts by the GDPR Institute, a Swiss membership body for professional data protection practitioners. She is sought after conference speaker and is widely quoted and published on both sides of the Atlantic. She runs her consultancy and research activities between London, Rome, and the Italian Alps. Oh, I'm really excited about this one, Chiara. Yeah, because every time I talk to you, I learn so much and my brain takes about 5 weeks to digest every time you talk about this.
Lovely to be here, David.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I know there was a number of items you wanted to talk to about. Chiara, I'll hand over to you.
David, thanks for this invitation to address your listeners. And I know you built up a very nice community of practice across the globe. I hear that this podcast is followed not just in the UK, not just in Europe, but globally. So congratulations on the podcast.
Thank you.
And I'd like to define in the four corners of this conversation with you today, because I will be focusing on European Union regulation, both already in force and enforceable, so applicable, and upcoming, which means it may have been agreed at legislative level, but it's not yet enforceable. There's a window there for preparing to comply with this. Both upcoming and already enforceable regulation at the EU level, which impact data. And of course, your community of practice, your listeners will be familiar with GDPR. But there is another very steep learning curve that we all have to climb or do or whatever, because the European Union is now looking at data as a market, as looking at digital activity, online activity as a market. So it's regulating it as a market. So what does it want to achieve when it regulates data? And how do we need to think beyond the way we used to think when we helped businesses prepare for GDPR? The steep learning curve there was convincing businesses, A, that data was an asset, that you needed to know where it was in your business. You needed to have registry, an asset that needs to be accounted for. So data maps were the big exercise of GDPR preparation. Yep. Then we started having to get people and businesses to think of identifiability as the key criteria for recognizing personal data. Personal data is not just what directly identifies an individual, but what can indirectly identify. Yeah. So this exercise in spotting identifiability issues within data sets that could be combined to generate identity. So that was another big learning curve. And then I think the other big win, if you want, for us as consultants was to get businesses to understand their responsibility towards data and see themselves as either processors, pure processors, or controllers.
Yeah, yeah.
And also get different functions within the same business to see themselves as controller. HR is controller.
And it's managing this, isn't it? And keeping control of it. Yeah.
That was a big, big learning curve that businesses were not used to thinking in those terms. And now I'm sad to say there's another huge learning curve. What's happening is that as you create laws, as legislators and regulators approach a subject matter, approach a market, they create new legal categories. Yeah. So there are new. So the European Union is now relying on new legal paradigms and new legal categories to divide data. So that it wishes to regulate. So regulate is to create legal categories. So businesses need to understand which one of these categories to fall into, which one of these categories does their data fall into. Yeah.
Is it possible they could fall into multiple of these categories
as well? Absolutely. Just like we used to have, you know, the classical problem was the mixed data set, both personal and non-personal.
Yep.
Now the classical problem will be that these categories will be overlapping and you'll be sitting on vast amounts of data to which multiple laws will apply. And that is where the specialists, the professionals that we belong to, that kind of group has to be really, really good at shepherding, at coaching businesses and understanding this. But so let's go over these categories very quickly.
Yeah.
So firstly, it's the personal versus non-personal. That stays. That's a big, major divide. And then there's a new sort of way of looking at data, which is public sector data versus private sector data. So you have to start thinking at where you sourced your data assets. Where do your data streams come from? Been originated? Have they originated from an agency that's been taxpayer funded? Is it a public sector data set? Because that's interesting. That made a business opportunity there. And I'll talk more about public sector data and what new requirements it needs to go through, and private sector data sets. Then, of course, it creates a separate category for IoT data, Internet of Things data.
Yeah.
It's now considered derived data, neither personal nor non-personal data. It's called derived data. A things data has its own regulation. Of course, then we have algorithms and artificial intelligence. We'll talk about that. So algorithms are regulated because data feeds into those. So regulating data and regulating algorithms is a twin exercise. So let's keep going. Public sector data are in turn divided in two camps, two types.
Yeah.
It's public sector data that's easy. It's free from data protection issues. It's free from confidentiality issues. It's free from IP, intellectual property claims.
Okay.
That's public sector data. For example, meteorological data, the Met Office data, weather reports. These are paid by the tax.
Congestion, that type of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
These are free from, gluten-free. No issue data.
Yeah.
And that is the public sector data, which has all sorts of constraints attached to it, confidentiality, data protection, intellectual property. And a typical example is a healthcare data, the NHS, the national.
Of course, yeah.
Again, paid by the taxpayer, funded publicly, generate enormous amounts of very useful data sets. But there are a lot of constraints when you go up and try and use those. So
And we've seen some of that, haven't we, in the past? Yeah.
These are the two camps. The private sector data, in turn, is distinguished according to the scale of the company generating it. So there's data that comes from the private sector, which belongs to the gatekeeper category, gatekeeper scale, which is so large that it can act as a choke point.
Have you got an example of that, perhaps?
We shouldn't be naming names, but the larger search on online search platform.
Yeah. Social media platforms.
Yeah. You considered gatekeepers.
Makes sense. Scale. Yeah.
And then there's data that is private sector data, but belongs to businesses that don't quite make it to the gatekeeper scale, but they still produce data and they still offer services. And we'll see that kind of sector, the private sector data, is regulated. I think that's crisscrossing of these categories, personal, non-personal, private sector, public sector is a very good start. And then IoT, which is separate, is a very good start to see the checkerboard.
Yeah, that makes sense. So shall we start by looking at non-personal data and what the EU means by that and how it's going to regulate it?
Absolutely.
Or it's regulating it?
Yeah. Absolutely. Let's start with the first one, the free from. Yeah, remember, cakes which have no milk, no egg.
No gluten, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Let me start. The free flow of non-personal data directive was created to prevent businesses using the GDPR as a kind of legal excuse, legal conveniency pretext for hoarding data.
You could
easily say, oh, my data sets are all mixed, my data is all personal, so I am applying the GDPR to all of my data sets, and I put all sorts of restraints around it. So the European Union realized that it had to fly the flag, if you want, for innovation and say, no, look, not all data is personal data. There is non-personal data. It needs to flow freely between businesses.
Yeah.
We mustn't allow data localization to take hold as a kind of default practice. And so, although it's a bit of a mouthful, and it's a little bit difficult to imagine how much purely non-personal data is out there, there is a regulation that says non-personal data, which are kept in clouds, or must be available for regulatory control. Public authorities must be able to retain access to data, even if it's located in another EU country, cloud. We mustn't see localization. We mustn't see vendor lock-in. And the free flow of non-personal data regulations doesn't distinguish between private or public data sets. This comes before that. So the free flow non-personal data regulations applies to non-personal data sets, whether they're private or whether they're public.
Yep.
And it's already in force, so it's applicable. It's already out there since the 28th of May, 2019. It's little known.
Is that because it's not in force very much at the moment?
I suppose, because it's a very good question. I suppose there's an issue in understanding that it's actually there to promote easier switching between cloud providers, and not every business understands that. But also because objectively, it does not apply to personal data sets or data sets which are mixed. And this is the big issue. A lot of data sets that businesses use are mixed.
They're going to be mixed,
It is an objective difficulty to identify and monetize data sets on the ground that they're totally non-personal, completely, purely non-personal data sets. If you do have data sets of that kind, what it means for you as a business, that you will be able to store non-personal data anywhere in the EU, you'll be able to switch. So that's the first one. It's a counterpoint, the kind of response to the GDPR, to those that claim European Union is hampering innovation. They just wanted to say, no, actually, we wanted to set free data if it's non-personal. That's the first point.
Yeah, interesting. The directive seems to be a catch-all solution. How does that work out? The public sector versus private sector distinction. And I guess almost technically, how sometimes do you separate that data? Because part of it might be one and part of it might be the other.
Exactly. So firstly, we'll have to see how this experiment in regulating free flows of non-personal data goes. And you're quite right. The mixed data sets are a hurdle. And the same hurdle is going to present itself when we try and make sense of the public sector data and the private sector data. Again, legal categories are sharp. They're cut with a knife.
You
never have that luxury of having sharply drawn categories. So you're right. That first one that we mentioned is not well known. It's not well enforced. It's not well understood. Probably it will be hard to have it work out, to evaluate how effective it's been in freeing up data. And hopefully we'll have lessons for the public sector and the private sector distinction. But let's follow the regulatory logic for a second, even though businesses might be confused. Public sector, okay? Public sector data, I mentioned, splits into two subcategories.
Yeah.
Firstly, the idea that you should regulate public sector data is very noble. It's, as I said, it's taxpayer money that goes into these agencies.
Exactly, that created it. Yeah.
Public services. So the logic there is that there's high value in there. It's been paid for by us.
Yeah.
So then this data set must meet interoperability, quality, accessibility standards that make it reusable and useful for the public. It's our data in a sense, and ultimately it should serve us, the public.
So that's almost a criteria, isn't it, of any public sector collecting that data needs to have that as part of their data designs.
This is a new set of obligations that really is placed squarely upon public sector agencies. For once, it's not just private sector that gets regulated, it's the public sector that gets regulated. Yes. So they have an obligation for interoperability, quality, and accessibility. So that's public sector in general. And then I said, we have to look at two categories. So the free from, the easy, the data sets which do not present particular problems from intellectual property or confidentiality. So we said meteorological data is an example, geospatial, you mentioned traffic data, perfect.
Yeah.
And I jokingly compared it to those cakes that are free from gluten, from eggs, etc. So no, that helps. That serves a purpose because they taste odd. Those cakes are really odd. You can eat them, but it is odd. And that's where it helps
they
you.
They taste different,
OD, odd. Open data.
Right.
That's a joke there. So the open data directive. You can think of as the directive, the law that regulates the free from public data sets that are not likely to throw up any particular reactions.
Got it.
This is already in force, and it's already enforceable since July 2021. It's mostly research data that can stem from day-to-day operations of these public agencies.
Yeah.
It wants to stimulate the publication of public sector data in a dynamic way. It wants to stimulate the uptake of APIs, the imposition of fair data principles. I don't have to tell you that FAIR stands for findability, accessibility, interoperability, and reusability. So it really imposes the fair data principles on all public sector and wants to remedy that inconsistent, heterogeneous quality of data. This different models that all agencies, every agency seems to have a special licensing contract. And of course, it wants to remedy bad metadata, bad description, which make publication, reuse, and discoverability of open data sets very complicated.
So this
is the European Union flying the flag for open data. The idea that there's now an obligation. And what it means for businesses, that if you are a data provider in government, you must ensure interoperability across all semantics, syntax, characteristic, common structure, metadata vocabulary, standards, cataloging. This must be really ingrained. But also, if you're a business, it means that you can actually knock on the door of these agencies and say, hey, you have this obligation. How are you meeting it? Where are we at with this? It's also interesting from a business perspective, because if you start thinking of all of these open data that's available to you, you should really start thinking about offsetting all the models that may no longer be viable because of new regulatory obligations you have, and start to looking, okay, where are the opportunities then? Where could I go and look for more revenue streams? Where else can I explore high-value data sets? And this is an important sort of event of your consulting life, okay? And let's go over to the category of data that has gluten, that has eggs, and has nuts, and can throw up all sorts of allergies and problems and strong reactions. So it's a second category of public data sets. It's not free from. It has a lot of issues. IP and confidentiality are the most typical ones. Yep. And I said the public healthcare system is a typical one. So this second subcategory has its own regulation. Think G for gluten, and you got the Data Governance Act. G for governance, gluten governance. That's how I remember it anyway. Data Governance Act. So again, it's in force since July 2021. It applies to all high-value data sets created by public sector bodies. It wants to encourage fair principles of interoperability, etc. But it wants to facilitate the reuse of government-held data for commercial and non-commercial purposes by creating two types of new market players, if you want. Two types of new actors that mediate the transactions and data sort of movement.
Yeah, that makes sense. We've covered the public sector data, but how does the EU legislator intend to regulate private sector data?
Let me finish this and then go to that. So this is The Data Governance Act is interesting because it applies to public sector data, but it creates actors that could be commercial entities. So, for example, you could have non-profit data altruism entities. So people who, as a non-profit, set up as non-profit entities, and they make it easier for everybody, for example, research bodies, etc., to access public sector data with confidentiality or IP issues. This could be health data, for example. So you have a market actor, a market subject that has that as a job, makes sure that businesses or research institutions can access, for example, healthcare data in secure environment, protecting confidentiality, respecting all the rules that apply to health sector, patient privacy, at the same time enabling reuse, enabling the fair principles, reuse of these very valuable data sets. So they will be specialists in mediating this access to data. At the same time, the Data Governance Act says that you can also set yourself as a commercial data sharing service provider. You'll have different rules, but essentially, think of the early stages of the COVID pandemic. Europe lacked a single workable legal framework for hospitals to obtain public health data. It was a nightmare. We realized that we didn't have. So this now means for you, if you're a public sector body, you don't have an obligation to allow reuse of data if it has these sort of constraints on it, but you are encouraged to allow the reuse in a non-discriminate, proportionate, and objectively justified manner. If you want to reshare data, you have to learn to manage privacy, commercial confidentiality risk, and you have to learn how to pseudonymize or encrypt data. And it means that if you are exploring new business opportunities, you could become one of these new actors under the Data Governance Act. You could become a commercial data sharing service provider, or you could become a not-for-profit data altruist. So this is from the point of view of the public sector data that has high value, but also high constraints. That's when we have to learn and study the Data Governance Act.
Yes.
And you were asking, how does the European Union regulate private sector data?
Exactly.
And there, the legislator is making a distinction between gatekeepers and online platforms or online service providers that do not fall into the gatekeeper category. Let's look at the first subcategory. So this is the private sector, the gatekeepers, the private sector generated by any platform that turns over 6.5 billion euros or more a year, 6.5 billion euros a year, or is attracting 45 million monthly active users.
Yep.
Monthly active, 45. So it's a large, very large enterprise.
Yeah.
So if you are a gatekeeper and fall into this category, you are regulated by the Digital Markets Act. Think M for monopoly, think M market. That's exactly what the regulators are worried about, monopolies and choke points. So preventing few large players from acting as gatekeepers and, as I said, choke points for all data exchanges between any data user and any data provider. The data market. The Digital Markets Act, DMA. Let's then look at the second subcategory. So that's data exchanged by any digital service provider that is not of gatekeepers.
And not a gatekeeper,
So that captures any website, any online marketplace, social network, collaborative.
Just a quick question, Kiara. Is there sometimes a bit of a gray area of when a gatekeeper is a gatekeeper, because some online marketplaces are absolutely humongous?
I know. And this is where there will be an official designation. You are designated as gatekeeper by the EU Commission. So it will be very clear who the gatekeepers are. They'll be named and listed. So there's a process, there's a designation process, and there's a reporting obligation on your monthly users. That's all part of the new regulatory push. So that's a very good question. And luckily, in this case, we are going to have a clear-cut answer, whether or not you're a gatekeeper. But I'll come back to that because it's interesting. If you're a startup and planning to scale up or planning to sell to a large gatekeeper, you have to start thinking like a gatekeeper when you offer the services, if that's your plan. If
so
that's
your infrastructure is appropriate, and your designs make a lot of sense.
If you're small, but you want to be bought up by a big one, you have to learn about this DMA, the Digital Markets Act. But let's look at any digital service, which is going to be the vast majority of those impacted by the new Brussels regulatory push. Mm-hmm. Will be, as I said, small social networks, content sharing platforms, app stores, even an online travel, booking accommodation platform, domain name registrars, web hosting, cloud, internet access providers. Okay, everybody will be regulated by the Digital Services Act. They are imposing obligations that have to do with content monitoring, with moderating and notifying users of why content is being moderated or taken down, offering processes, appeal. It's going to involve a lot of work, and it's going to be based around the principles of consumer protection. And the very, very basic principle that whatever is illegal offline, it's going to have to be illegal online too. Sales of illicit goods will now have to be monitored very closely, and you have to know who your sellers are. From now on, after the Digital Services Act, the DSA, you are no longer going to be allowed to be a dog on the internet and nobody knows that you're a dog. Everybody will have to know whether you're a dog or not. So anyway, Digital Services Act. And this is probably the one that law firms and all the big consulting firms are focusing on, because it's going to impact the vast majority of service providers online. So yeah, that's a public sector and private sector distinction there.
Yeah, you're going to discuss IoT data, I think, Kiara. Yeah, is that under regulatory scrutiny as well?
Absolutely. Thank you for reminding me. IoT data, as I said, doesn't seem to come under either the personal data or the non-personal data category. It's its own category. Okay. It's called derived data. It's data generated by connected devices in use by individuals. There was a long time when we were wondering, okay, what's my smartwatch data? Is it personal data? Is it machine data? What is it? And the European Union cut the knot and said, okay, it's neither. It's derived data and it has its own regulation. And it's the Data Act regulation. And again, to make sense of this alphabet soup, just remember derived data, at regulation.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't have IoT in the name, in the title, but essentially it's there to regulate the IoT. And this is an interesting act because it's there to allocate economic rights. It's there to share, if you see, to express myself this way, is there to share the economic benefit, the economic dividend of the Internet of Things. There's always a question, who's going to make the most money out of the IoT? Is it the device manufacturer? Is it the app developer that run on the device? Is it the device user? Who's got rights over that data? Is my smartwatch data mine? Is it others? Is it Apple's? Who has economic rights over that data? And this is where the Data Act regulation really dives into the question of monetizing data, which as privacy professionals have always tiptoed around this, because the GDPR never mentions data ownership, avoids the whole issue of data profiting from data. But finally, you tackle the issue and you really need to get your teeth, sink your teeth into the Data Act regulation.
Yeah.
If in any way participate in the IoT economy, whether you're developing apps, whether you're developing
apps. That is absolutely massive. Yeah.
That's there. That's the IoT sort of corner of things.
Yeah, that's interesting. And the other thing was about all data basically feeds into algorithms so it can be used. What about the EU's efforts in regulating these algorithms?
Exactly. And I think it won't be news to you that the EU is regulating artificial intelligence. The Artificial Intelligence Act is there exactly to set up those and audits for algorithms data feeds into. And they're categorized according to the risk these algorithms pose to individuals under the Charter of Fundamental Rights of European Union. So again, It's, if you want, a cross between consumer protection, fundamental rights protection, but auditing. So it's a way of regulating harm deriving and stemming from algorithms. And again, artificial intelligence, it's a huge element, but you cannot take it apart really from the regulation of data, because a lot of the bias that you see in algorithms, and I learned this from you, David, you're the expert. A lot of the bias and unfair outcomes of algorithms are there in the original data set that you feed into the algorithm.
That's very true.
So treat the artificial intelligence acts as a separate standalone kind of body of law without looking at how, for example, the public sector data sets.
Yes.
Their principles are being applied. It's illogical. You really have to look at...
You need to look at the whole picture, don't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. That definitely went some way towards helping us navigate this alphabet soup of EU regulations. So what do you think businesses should actually do today to prepare for this?
This episode is brought to you by VCSO.co. We help companies to meet privacy and cybersecurity requirements and standards so they close sales deals quicker and can achieve cyber certifications, privacy alignment, in minimum time.
Oh, good question. Massive question. It boils down to accept that you have another learning curve. If you are still thinking in GDPR terms, accept that the controller processor categories are still there, but I'm not going to help you with this new regulation.
Yeah.
You have to teach yourself these new legal categories. So not only how data can be categorized, how your relationship in the market to the other players is. Are you a gatekeeper?
Yeah.
Are you not a gatekeeper? Are you likely to become one? Are you likely to be working with one? Are you an online intermediary service provider that's not of gatekeeper scale? So this is the first job. Learn the lingo. The second, exactly, match your business plans to these regulations, because when Brussels regulate a market, it really sets out to discourage certain business models. You can't just hope to hire a lawyer and make the problem go away. It's not going to go away.
Yep.
This regulation has been pushed out precisely because the markets need change, and precisely because some business and revenue models need to be destroyed. There's going to be value destruction in the ways businesses make money. So accept that your business models and operating models must be revised in light of what this new Brussels regulatory push wants to encourage vis-a-vis what it wants to discourage or destroy or reduce and put under control. So that's a big sort of check of your revenue and operating model. And then certainly understand at all times what your monthly average users are, because scale matters. Scale means
of course,
that category fall into. Even if you don't have many, just know how many you've got.
And
make preparations, whatever size you are, make preparation to moderate, remove, and justify removal of content. I think this is the most visible, impactful outcome of these regulations.
Yeah.
Content is no longer free to publish online.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a level of moderation and control now. Yeah.
As an online service provider, no longer exempt. You can no longer say, I'm just the publisher. I'm the pipeline through which data flows. No, you have to take an active control of what goes on. And of course, that goes together with vetting and identifying users, your posters, your content creators. Who are they? Anonymity is no longer allowed. And lastly, I'd say get a grip on what your data sources are, because of course you should, in theory, you should know the lineage of all your data.
Yeah, of course,
When you map your data, you know where they come from, where you obtain them. But now this lineage has to be carefully tied into the legal categories that we mentioned. So are your data sets mostly public data sets? That's good. Have they got functionality issues, IP issues?
Yeah.
That's a problem. So you have to really audit your data sources.
Yeah. And I guess document it. So you've got a reference point.
Absolute.
On the origins.
Yeah. But as I said, you know, because it's regulating the market as a market, the European Union does want to create new opportunities.
Yeah, of course.
There is a genuine intent to foster, encourage innovation. So studying what's right for your business in terms of innovation should go hand in hand to, oh my God, there's new compliance.
And potentially, enhance the scalability and the growth.
Especially if you're a professional that advises businesses, if you're a consultant like yourselves that advises businesses, doing the two together will give you an edge over law firms, for example, that only really talk compliance.
Very true.
New onerous costs. So find out the opportunities, find out what works for your business.
Very interesting, definitely.
Yeah, I'd say that's the message there.
Great. We're just about running out of time here, Kiara. So thank you so much. A huge amount of information with phenomenal kind of detail and impact. If anyone's listening would like to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you, Kiara?
Thank you, David. I think the easiest is just connect on LinkedIn, name and surname. There is a very detailed profile of me. You can recognize me.
Yeah.
Ask to connect and then we can message that way. That's the platform I'm constantly using. So follow me and connect with me. I think that's the way.
Great. Thank you so much for coming
Thanks
on the podcast, Kiara.
And
we'll have to do another one of these. Yeah. Because I think every point you've mentioned is probably almost a podcast in its own right.
With pleasure, David. Absolute pleasure. We're all learning from each other's experience, as they say.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe.